This is the 12 Songs of Christmas. I'm Alex Rawls, and today I'm talking about the godfather of go-go, Chuck Brown, and his Christmas music. Go-go, or Washington, D.C. go-go, or D.C. go-go, as my guest Melissa Weber calls it, made a mark on me when I got Trouble Funk's album Drop the Bomb in 1982, and I saw them 2 days in a row in Toronto a few years later. Toronto has become a center for dance music in North America, but at the time, Toronto audiences were notorious for not dancing. Trouble Funk moved the crowd almost immediately, and for the whole show the first night. Next day was an outdoor show, and you kind of got shaking around, not actual, like, dancing. Melissa Weber is a musicologist here in New Orleans who studied go-go and plays it on her WWOZ radio show that she hosts under the name she's best known by here, DJ Soul Sister. She puts Trouble Funk in their place in the go-go story in our conversation, which focuses heavily on the guy who laid down the blueprint for it, Chuck Brown. I'm not going to go too deep right now into introducing Brown to you, because Melissa does that in our conversation far better than I can. We're talking because in 1999, he released The Spirit of Christmas. And there's another go-go Christmas compilation, Let's Go-Go Christmas, released in 1991. We'll talk about them and a Chuck Brown Christmas single, a Christmas song backed with That Spirit of Christmas, sung with Eva Cassidy. Brown died in 2012, so we'll start with one of the songs that laid down the blueprint for DC Go-Go, We Need Some Money, by Chuck Brown and the Soul Searchers. Let's start by talking about Chuck Brown, who has been referred to as the godfather of go-go. Now, I asked you on the show because I know you can go deep on both Brown and go-go, but for listeners for whom Chuck Brown is new and they've only heard about go-go, let's go shallow first. Give me a starting place on Chuck and go-go.
So essentially, go-go or DC go-go, as I call it, because, you know, if I was in DC, in the DC community, I would just, or in the go-go community, I'd just say go-go, but because I'm in New Orleans, I always preface it with DC go-go so that you don't think we're talking about, you know, going to a go-go from Smokey Robinson and the Miracles, or go-go dancers, or Wake Me Up Before You Go-Go, right, by Wham, or something like that. So DC go-go is an indigenous music culture that comes out of Washington, DC. It is very specific to Black working class Washington, D.C. And to make a very long story short, it comes out of funk music in the 1970s. The characteristics, well, you have to have conga drums. And in the live setting, which is where it's best experienced, if you go see the go-go, right, if you go to the go-go to hear some go-go music, you're going to hear various songs throughout the night, all bridged together by conga breaks. So the congas are not only a part of the song, but they're actually bridging various songs. So it'll sound like one long song. It's not like a traditional concert you go to where, you know, a band does their thing, they play their song, and then it ends, people might clap, and then the next song is introduced. There's no break. It's all extended and bridged together. And it's not only the sound, which is a funk sound, and you've got the element of the conga drums, and also rototom drums are very prevalent now. it's also a certain type of a beat. Chuck Brown once described it as resembling Mr. Magic, 1975 song by saxophonist Grover Washington Jr. And it's hard to explain what that beat is, but it is a very significant style. Once you hear it, you really don't forget it. Other characteristics include things like a lead talker instead of a lead singer. At the live go-go, you might hear a lead talker shouting out neighborhoods, crews at, you know, back in the day in some of the old school recordings that I've heard in the late 70s and 80s, they'd shout out crews, making announcements. That's the function of a lead talker. So not necessarily singing even.
Yeah. Right, right.
Some of that happens, but, you know, lead talker is especially in some of the early old school go-go recordings, is the main player in this music. Yeah. And then Chuck Brown, he's called the godfather of go-go. He was the first one to really synthesize and popularize this beat, this go-go beat with his band, and also started bridging the songs together. As he has explained in interviews in the 1970s, in the mid to late 1970s, when he was performing, you know, the onset of the discotheque DJ was putting some bands out of work. And he said in these interviews that he was going to make certain that he would always have a job. So to prevent the disco DJ from, you know, coming in and performing in between his sets and maybe eventually replacing him, he just had the band to extend the break so that they just never stopped.
Right.
Hence go-go, yeah, right?
It
just keeps going. And then it evolved into, you know, much more, but Chuck is the godfather of that. And he had a national hit with a song called Bustin' Loose from 1978. And the album comes out in 1979. And as far as a commercial release, that's the first biggie. Bustin' Loose by Chuck Brown and the Soul Searchers.
You know, I hadn't seen that interview or seen him talking about sort of the concept of filling it out, spreading out the time so there was no room for a DJ and no need for a DJ. But while you were talking and when I think about go-go, I always have thought about it as an attempt to reproduce with live musicians what sort of old school, you know, first generation hip hop dance parties were, where you had the sections of songs bridged together with the dance breaks and with breaks and percussion. It was about keeping people dancing for as long as possible. And it wasn't about 3 minutes and a stop, 3 minutes and a stop. It was about bridging song into dance, into percussion break, into song, you know, into percussion break, and extending the show that way. Or not having heard any of it, that's the way I always pictured it in my mind.
It's interesting because the early popularity of the go-go culture really starts happening in the late 1970s and early 80s, almost concurrently with hip-hop culture that happens in the New York City boroughs, but they really don't intersect.
That's interesting.
That much.
Yeah.
There's a lot of vamping, obviously, with go-go. It's all instruments, but quite honestly, the kids in the DC go-go scene who are going to that those parties, again, largely and 99% Black audiences of young people and supporting, they were more interested in go-go. They could have cared less about hip-hop happening in New York City.
Right.
There are a lot of stories of rappers who would perform in DC in the 1980s, and the promoter would say, okay, you have two choices. You can either headline the show in DC because you're top act, people know who you are, even outside of New York City, you've got a song on the charts. You either headline in DC and you have a go-go band perform before you, open for you. The kids are going to come and see the go-go band and they're going to leave before you get on stage. So you will get the honor of headlining the show, but you're going to play for an empty audience. Or you can swallow your pride a little bit and open for the go-go band and not perform to an empty audience, because the kids in DC want to see the go-go artists.
Yeah. That's interesting. The idea, I mean, it makes sense. The idea that these things happen in parallel, that there was people devised a region specific dance music built around the aesthetics of dance and aesthetics of the party, rather than built around the aesthetics of a song. That makes sense that this would happen. I mean, because New Orleans had its own versions of that with brass bands, and built around the regional specifics of how people dance and why people dance and sort of how they dance, rather than being built around the premise of a song. That interests me.
And it's a very, again, community-based music culture. You know, if you go, it's the same if you go to a second line. If you go and you're not from the culture, you can enjoy yourself. You can dance and you can enjoy the surrounding and seeing people dance. But when certain things are said, when certain calls and responses are done, you might feel outside of that. And that's one of the reasons why the music has never really translated out of the DC area. There's been some attempts to mitigate that and change that. But it's why most people outside of DC have never heard of go-go. It's why a lot of people inside of DC have never heard of go-go.
Yeah, that totally makes sense. I mean, and even in the city, the idea of a not just a specific community, but even a class-based community. It's not an economic strata defined, not just race, but also, you know, economic status also helps to identify and make. I'm sure there are people who think that they are, you know, they're too cool for it, or, you know, whatever. So
maybe feel out of place there.
Yes, absolutely. Yes.
I wouldn't even say, well, yeah, that too. They may feel it's beneath them, or they may not feel comfortable for whatever reasons. All of those are conversations. And I feel like New Orleans, some of our New Orleans culture, like brass bands and second lines, we share a lot with the DC go-go scene. As I always like to say, DC and New Orleans are the last places left in the United States where today, contemporary, you have the concept of a big band, right? A large scale band with members, Black musicians, Black musicians rolling 10, 11, 12 members deep. And it's supported by the community, not in some fancy concert hall that's a grant supported, you know, presentation, but literally just every night of the week, every weekend in a local spot, you know, in the neighborhood, supported with dollars by Black audiences.
Yeah.
DC Go-Go and our New Orleans brass bands and second lines. Only two places left in the country where that thing is real.
Yeah, yeah. I'll tell you, it's one of the things we have taught our daughter. If we hear horns, we go outside. It doesn't matter. We're not far from the bar where Prince of Wales, Soul Shade and Pleasure Club, meet up before events. And if they're having an event and there's horn, we can hear them. You know, we got to go outside and hear music. So, you have to be a part of it. Even if at a distance, I'm always very conscious. A second line through my neighborhood, I always think second lines are neighborhood events and neighborhood specific. And I respect other people's neighborhoods, and I don't need to go see everybody's, but if it comes through my neighborhood, it involves me too. So I'm always very careful about that.
Well, you pointed out something I have to share that might be a difference with New Orleans. We're very open, accepting. We also recognize that our music culture is important and that our community is important. There have been so many conversations on the record about criminalization of go-go scenes, wow, blaming music for events. So that's not a thing that actually happens here.
Right, you know,
bands having to find alternate spaces in which to play go-go music because they've been targeted by the police.
Wow.
I've been at go-go's in the fire station, bowling alley. Some that have been in skating rinks, also performing outside of the DC limits, like in Maryland and Virginia. So that is a difference.
Oh, yeah.
That is a difference that we don't really have to worry about in New Orleans.
Yeah, thankfully.
Not yet, anyway. Not
exactly.
They don't want to go down that road.
We can keep talking about go-go and talking about noir, about music in the big picture, but we're here also talking about Chuck Brown and talking about his album, The Spirit of Christmas, that came out in 1999. I have to say, for me, his version of White Christmas is the one that I think of most sort of embodies what we think of when we think of go-go, that I hear the timbales, the rototoms, the congas, and the kind of, I always think the tempo is kind of a loping groove. And we're all like, that's laying language on a sound. And so I know that's not exactly right, but it always is kind of the groove, the adjective that we're, or adverb, that sounds right to me. So to give you an idea of what we're talking about, we'll go to Chuck Brown, The Spirit of Christmas, and his version of White Christmas. And then we'll talk more about it and Chuck Brown on the other side.
I'm dreaming of a white Christmas, just like the ones I used to know, where the treetops glisten.
So I want to make sure, I think we've touched on this, but I want to make sure we got it right here. Where should people go for what you think of as the quintessential Chuck Brown?
I'll answer that in two ways. Fortunately, the Chuck Brown estate and management of that estate has done a wonderful job of providing studio recordings and high quality. So really anything that you find is going to be really, really awesome. In fact, the legacy of Brown's music is still carried on through his band. The Chuck Brown Band performs regularly. The Chuck Brown Band performs regularly in the DC area and surrounding areas.
Oh, that's
sometimes
cool.
Even go, you know, outside. I know they performed in Philadelphia recently, and they still release new music. So, you really can't go wrong with Chuck Brown, though I will cite one recording called Go Go Live, Chuck Brown and the Soul Searchers. It's either from 1986 or 1987, I believe. And I know that's a very non-specific title. So that's why I'm saying really anything by Chuck Brown will be great. But Chuck Brown and the Soul Searchers, Go Go Live with Go Go Swing and Moody's Mood for Love and Woody Woodpecker, all of that, that whole album, right? And I'm speaking on the vinyl side. There's side one and there's side two because there's no breaks.
Yeah,
it was recorded live and there are no breaks, obviously, because that's Go-Go.
Right, yeah. Like, I always think Chuck Brown, you know, please correct me if I'm wrong on this, but when I hear him, I hear somebody who was clearly massively influential and developed, you know, was so important in developing this music. But I also hear a guy who was straight first up an R&B and blues guy, and he would do songs that where that was the dominant mode, more, and there were tracks like on the record. He does Charles Brown's Merry Christmas Baby. And you can hear the elements of go-go in it, but you can hear a blues guy first. And that's the part that is sort of, I always think, is most identifiable in a track like that. And so I always think, and clearly his affection, like affection for jazz, and that it always seemed like there was more that where other people, their music lived solely inside sort of a go-go world that he defined. His own music was wider than just the go-go vein. Do you agree?
Not anything can be go-go, right? It just has to have that go-go beat. So right. You're appreciating his blues and jazz, which he put to the go-go beat. But then I think of also, he could do anything. There's a video, if you search on YouTube, you can find it. It was a huge, huge concert called Live at the Capitol Center, Go-Go Live at the Capitol Center. Thousands and thousands and thousands of young people to fill that arena for only go-go recording artists. And this happened in the mid to late 1980s. I don't recall the year offhand, but Chuck Brown was among the performers. And in addition to his own songs, or, you know, he also did a very popular go-go rendition of Run Joe. He also does a go-go version of I'm Bad, the LL Cool J rap song, go-go style. That's one of my favorites from Chuck. So Chuck could do anything go-go, and go-go can really be anything. You'll find a lot of covers in go-go, but you'll also find original material as well.
Right. I can tell you, my first go-go show was, and I've never been to DC, but I saw Trouble Funk in Toronto in 85 or 86 and saw them in a small club. And it was mind-boggling because at the time, Toronto fans didn't dance. Now Toronto has become one of the dance music centers in North America. But at the time, that did not happen. And so it was mind-blowing to be at a show where people were dancing on the furniture and that everybody was up, and everybody was up for the whole show. And so I always have that night was magic. Do you remember your first go-go show?
Oh, gosh, yeah. Oh, my gosh. So there are two ways I answer that. The first one, having been here in New Orleans, Chuck Brown and the Soul Searchers performed at the Essence Festival in one of the super lounges, right? The small super lounges that were held, while the huge main stage headliners were, in the main area. And I was excited, didn't know what to expect. I walked in there, oh my gosh, and I'm not even exaggerating when I say this. It was full of, obviously, D.C. area or D.C., Maryland, Virginia area fans who probably could have seen Chuck Brown back home, but they were there to support Chuck Brown and the Soul Searchers, the Chuck Brown Band. And everyone was off the wall, bouncing. I think someone somersaulted in front of me, literally. I didn't know. I was in such shock. I stood there. I don't think I danced because there was so much whirl and activity around me. To take it all in, I've never actually experienced anything like it. Also, the thing to remember, and this doesn't get talked about a lot, is the go-go bands, they don't play when it comes to sound. The sound has to be immaculate and has to be powerful. This is not just standard. The sound, a lot of times the sound engineer will travel with the band. They have their preferred sound engineers. It's almost as if the engineer is part of the band. That sound has to be right. And I've never experienced anything like it elsewhere. So I saw Chuck Brown first here in New Orleans. And then, to make a very long story short, I decided one day that I really wanted to go to D.C. to experience it, the real thing, for myself on D.C. soil. And my first show was Rare Essence at a now defunct club called Club U on U Street. Same thing, walked in, the sound, deafening, powerful. They don't play when it comes to sound. You're not going to have someone say, we had a bad sound night. No, that's part of the gig. And nonstop energy, power. My favorite instrument is the bass. So that was kicked up. The conga drums, the cowbells, everything all at once. Just sensory overload. Like, I'll never forget it. So yeah, Chuck Brown and the Soul Searchers. Or maybe at that time they had, it was just under the name Chuck Brown. I don't recall when they were at Essence Festival. And then Rare Essence. And that would have been in the early 2000s for me. Okay. And I've been going back to D.C. and the D.C. area to see go-go's ever since.
Yeah. I was going to ask you about a Rare Essence track, so we're going to sort of jump around a little bit, because in 2007, there is an album came out, Let's Go Go Christmas, and it's a weird compilation, and for a long time, I didn't take it seriously, because the only acts I recognized on it were, there's a Junkyard Band track, there's a Chuck Brown track, a live version of the Christmas song. And Rare Essence do the Jackson 5's Give Love on Christmas Day. And it's awesome.
People making this hot and special gifts, taking time to be kind to one another. It's that time of year when good friends are.
where does Rare Essence sort of fit into the story? Who are the bands? Like I said, I recognized, you know, I've seen Trouble Funk, I've seen Junkyard Band, and I recognize Rare Essence. I've never seen them. Who are the other bands that we ought to know about?
If we're talking about the first generation of the bands, you know, in the 80s, Rare Essence is a huge one. In fact, Rare Essence is still impactful, hugely impactful. The way I describe it, it's like, you know, Trouble Funk, they made a very large impact beyond DC and outside of DC. But today, if you go to DC, most, you know, Rare Essence is still performing weekly, several times a week, to sold out crowds.
Yeah.
Rare Essence is the thing, right? Trouble Funk don't play often as much as I've seen. And then their crowd is more of a crossover crowd, whereas Rare Essence is, you know, still neighborhood all the way and support, that undying support. If I was talking in New Orleans terms, I would liken Trouble Funk to the Dirty Dozen and Rare Essence to Rebirth.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. I get that.
Also, EU, Experience Unlimited, they started as a non-go-go band in the mid to late 1970s, and now they are legends in go-go, right? They're pioneering. And for today, contemporary, the big one to know is the Backyard Band.
Backyard Band.
Without a doubt.
Okay, cool.
Don't you give me all that jive about things you wrote before I was alive. Cause this ain't 1823, ain't even 1970. Now I'm the guy named Curtis Blow, and Christmas is one thing I know. So every year, just about this time, I celebrate it with a rhyme. Gonna shake it, gonna bake it, gonna make it good. Gonna rock, shock, rock it through your neighborhood. Gonna read, gonna...
What's your background with Christmas music?
My background Christmas music?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, there are two Christmas songs that I really like. One of them is Christmas Rappin' by Curtis Blow.
Excellent.
From 1979. And the other is a song. Oh, I thought of another one. The other one is a song by Rufus Thomas called I'll Be Your Santa Baby. And that's from 1974. And there are random things that I enjoy. There's a Jingle Bells by Bunny Sigler from Philadelphia International Records. That's from 74. I do collect Christmas music, but if I had to say, I'll listen to this even if it's not Christmas time, it would be those two.
Yeah.
Christmas Rappin' by Curtis Blow and I'll Be Your Santa Baby by Rufus Thomas. I also love Soulful Christmas by James Brown. That's 1970.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Here comes Santa Claus.
Melissa and I ran out of time before we got to draw attention to Brown's first recorded foray into Christmas music, The Christmas Song and That Spirit of Christmas, performed with Eva Cassidy in 1991. They're not typical go-go and reflect the breadth of Brown's musical reach. As we talked about earlier, he was a go-go pioneer, but he put his first band together in 1966, and at that point, if you couldn't play James Brown, you couldn't play. He learned early on to play whatever people liked, whether it was what was on the radio, blues, jazz, and he eventually worked up go-go versions of movie themes and jazz standards. On the single, you can hear Brown, the balladeer, without the big groove behind him.
chestnuts roasting on an open fire. Jack Frost nipping at your nose. Yuletide carols being sung by a choir, and folks dress up like Eskimos.
I interviewed Chuck Brown in 2009 about the early days of Go-Go, and you can find a link to it in the show notes. The byline might be wrong, but it's a conversation that Brown and I had before he played Jazz Fest in New Orleans that year. I don't know if I take everything he says as gospel truth, but I believe it was his truth. And the details make sense. It's definitely entertaining. You get a sense of who he is, and I'm glad I got a chance to interview him. Thanks to Melissa Weber for the time and her effort to spread the DC Go-Go word. She has a birthday bash at Tipitina's in New Orleans each year, and this past one featured another Go-Go mainstay, EU, best known for Debut, from the soundtrack to Spike Lee's School Days. You can hear Melissa DJ on New Orleans Community Radio, WWOZ, on Saturday nights from 8 to 10 p.m. Central. The channel streams at WWOZ.org, and if you want to hear her show on demand, it's in the two-week archive. Thanks, as always, for listening. And if you have any comments, thoughts, or questions or whatever, I'm easily found on Facebook at 12 Songs of Christmas. If you like what you hear, please tell your friends. We'll wrap up with one more from Chuck Brown's The Spirit of Christmas. This is his version of God Rest Ye Merry Gentlemen. Talk to you next week.